Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichet. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio.
Hello and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. I'm Tim Hayes. I'm your host for the first hour. And today is Wednesday, April 17th, 2024. As always, we're grateful to everyone who's joining us here today, whether you're listening live or through the archives, as we spend another couple of hours teaching and supporting people in using some of the most powerful, effective, efficient, and accessible tools I've ever encountered. These tools are available absolutely free through the tireless efforts of Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice on the website at whyagain.org. If you go to that webpage and click on the two words that say Start Here, located in the upper left-hand corner, it will take you to a page where you can download and read Chapter 24 of Dr. Michael Rice's book. His book is titled, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? And that chapter of the book contains a narrative description and explanation of the primary tool in this work. That tool is called the Reality Management Worksheet, sometimes called the Reality Management Wake-Up Sheet. And it's a tool I've been using to great effect for over 19 years now to improve the quality of my life and most of my relationships, and to turn any negative emotional experience I have into part of the infallible guidance system that each and every one of us has been given. You can also download the actual worksheet process itself. It's a simple PDF file. Click the link, download it, print it off, copy it as often as you'd like, and use it over and over again absolutely free. You can also go to your App Store and type in the three words Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness. And if you choose to do that before you're done typing the word forgiveness, you'll see the glowing heart icon. If you tap on that, it will let you download a completely free and private app that contains the Reality Management Worksheet. It also contains an abbreviated version of that worksheet process. And it contains a copy of the Dragon Klingon game, which is a wonderful way to introduce these tools to even younger audiences. We hope people do all of that soon and often, primarily because it tends to improve the quality of people's lives the more they actively apply these tools in their lives. And secondarily, because it tends to prompt comments, questions, answers, and testimonials. And if you have any of those to share with us, we would appreciate you doing so by giving us a call at 563-999-3581. Once you call that number, if you press 1 on your phone, it'll put the little icon of a hand by your phone number. I'll then be able to turn on the microphone and announce you by your area code, and we can have a conversation. If you would like to have a comment or a question addressed on the show and you do not want to call in live, you can send us an email. You can email me at tjh@mindshifters-academy.org, and you can email Jeannie at jeannie@whyagain.org. That's whyagain.org. And if we get a comment or a question from you through an email, we'll address it on the internet show, and then as time allows, send you a notification about what day and time that occurred so you can listen back to the archives for your feedback or input. And we greatly appreciate whenever anybody chooses to do that, because it makes it far easier for us to live into our intention with this work. The intention we have with this work is to be a service, and that's just a whole heck of a lot easier to do when we know how these things are landing for you. So we have plenty of time for comments and questions. I was reading yesterday in the Way of Mastery, Lesson 17. We had our support group last night. We listened to a vintage Guy Finley talk from the Steps to Oneness CD set. And I did the processing of a worksheet later in the group. So all kinds of things to be talked about and or shared. If you're interested in doing any of that, give us a call and press 1 on your phone, 563-999-3581. How can we support you today? How are the work we're doing, reading through the Course in Miracles and Walk in the Physical and Diedrich Wolzak's book, Choose Again, and The Way of Mastery, how's that all landing for you? We have, I had the experience to have a new patient start this morning and another person who's only in about their fourth or fifth session. And it's just, you know, to my mind, it's just mind-boggling how deeply we're conditioned in our culture to believe things that aren't true. The primary thing we're conditioned to believe that isn't true is that our emotions are caused by people and things outside of us. And I just finished a session with somebody who just said three times, you know, it's really hard to wrap my head around this, what you're saying. And I agree. He's in his 50s, and for his entire life, he's been taught the opposite of what I'm asking him to start observing for himself. So it makes really good sense that it would seem absurd to him and be something that's very difficult for him to, quote, wrap his mind around. How can it be? It seems to me that it's as plain as the nose on my face, which is pretty prominent for those of you who don't have phonovision. But I have a very prominent nose on my face, and it seems just that obvious that, hey, this happened, and then almost immediately after it happened, I felt upset, so it must be that this situation caused my upset. How could it be anything else? It makes perfect sense. It must be that way. Well, the problem with that is it's not that way. The problem with believing that is it's false. And if I can't open myself to questioning everything I think I know, everything my senses are telling me, especially when I'm left feeling any kind of discomfort, physical, mental, or emotional discomfort, if I can't bring myself to question everything I think I know during those periods of time, then I cannot find a way out of that prison. I will remain a prisoner of my beliefs. And the work we do here is specifically designed to help people break out of the prison of beliefs and have a life of liberty that goes beyond anything they've imagined before each new heartbeat. And it begins with my willingness to question everything I think I know. If I can't question what I know, I can't learn anything new. I will remain forever with whatever knowledge, factual or artificial, that I started with whenever I enter a situation holding on to a belief. It is, it's a, for some people, it's quite a long, slow process to do the healing work. And yet, if we can bring ourselves to do an accurate check-in from time to time, we'll be able to see what our conscious logical mind will hide from us. Our conscious logical mind will literally hide from ourselves the evidence of our progress. And I don't know exactly why that happens or how or what the design flaw is in the system. That's not mine to discern. Mine is just to observe that this is what happens. This is why we encourage people in the reality management worksheet to rate their upset level before they start and rate it again at the end. Because even within a worksheet process, I might still feel some upset and have a part of my mind telling me, well, that didn't work. But if I'm doing the worksheet process and I rate my upset level before I start and then I rate it again at the end, there's a pretty good chance that I'll notice a difference. And then again, over time, if I'm doing a worksheet on, let's say, my irritation with the way my father treated me when I was younger, and I've done worksheets for a couple years, and then I get frustrated because it just seems to be, I keep getting this same dynamic, this same memory coming up, and my conscious logical mind will most likely try to tell me, why do you do these worksheets? They're not helping. You're still upset about your dad, or you're still upset at this and that level. If I start to look at, if I'm rating my upset level on a scale of 0 to 10, 0 being no upset, 10 being the most it could possibly be, over time, I can start comparing notes, and I realize, oh, you know what? Yeah, I've been doing the same kind of a worksheet on the same kind of upset and dynamic for the past year and a half. However, a year and a half ago, if this kind of situation had happened, I would have had an upset level of, on a scale of 0 to 10, it'd be 183. And now it's only a level 6. And I can see, if I allow myself the willingness to question what my conscious logical mind wants to tell me, whenever I'm upset, if I allow myself to question what my conscious logical mind is telling me whenever I'm upset, the great teachings let us know we will discover that our conscious logical mind is lying to us. It is not the truth that's coming into my awareness from my conscious logical mind whenever I'm upset. It's always a lie. It's always a distortion. And we can know that only through direct observation. If we're willing to pick up the worksheet process or any other tool that we are willing to use and just keep applying it until the upset is dismantled, we will begin to see the truth in these ancient teachings. That whenever I'm upset, whatever my mind is telling me is not accurate. And job one, first priority should be to restore peace, calm, a loving state. What the ancient Aramaic language tells us is the word rachma. Get myself restored to peace and calm, or what Richard Schwartz calls the 8 C's from his internal family systems work. Eight words that begin with the letter C. That list is compassion, curiosity, clarity, creativity, calm, confidence, courage and connectedness. If I'm coming from any of those, I can be reasonably comfortable that what my mind is showing me is fairly accurate. If I'm coming from anger or fear or hurt or tension at any level, I can know pretty much rock solid whatever my mind is telling me is way off the mark. And we're here to help you, help ourselves, into a practice that builds our proficiency in using these various tools to restore our mind to that calm, compassionate, creative, connected space, which most likely is exactly what the ancient Aramaic was referring to when it was teaching us about rachma, a filter over the frontal lobes of the brain that allows only intentions keyed to love to be used as the building blocks for our goals. And since we don't do anything unless we have a goal for it first, this is the way to make sure that our actions are keyed to love. So our call-in number is 563-999-3581, and we have plenty of time for comments, questions, and whether you want to discuss what happened in the support group last night, or you want to know about the worksheet I did, or you have a question of your own worksheet. I just want to make sure that we repeat the invitation to call that number and press 1 on your phone, even if it seems like I'm in the middle of a monologue or reading something. Area code 541, you're in the air. We'll have to try that again in a bit. There was no signal coming through there. So I'll return to lesson 17 in the way of transformation. Where I left off was at the beginning of a segment titled Imprinting in the Womb. And the text reads, the very first universe that you experience within the physical dimension is the experience or the universe of the womb. Here, when you're here and you're coming into physical, you are in constant communication with all that is passing through the energy field of the mother. This does not just mean that the pot pie she had for dinner or the cup of coffee that she had in the morning that make your heart race. It's also the quality of the air she breathes. It's also her mental, emotional, and physical energies at every level. The text goes on and says, but more important than all this is the quality of emotional energy that makes up the particular matrix, the matrix that she is experiencing in her own universe. For these things immediately affect the hormonal balances, the flow of chemicals through the physiological system. And at this point, you are very much a part of that physiological system. Therefore, you take on and you begin to feel and experience the psychic field of the mother. And you're also aware of the psychic field of the father and any other immediate family members. You're also aware of the energies, that any particular dominant energies that are going on within the social structure. Remember, we talked about webs of relationship. You are in a field of energy, within a field of energy, within a field of energy, within a field of energy, even in your third dimensional realm. as I read that, I remember that people did some research about what happened. What was the impact on the physiology of infants that were in the mother's womb when 9/11 happened? And they did research. They found people who agreed to be tested, and they compared the cortisol and other stress hormone levels of babies of the same age in the same socioeconomic level for babies that were in the womb when the 9/11 Twin Towers, the attack on the Twin Towers at the World Trade Center in New York happened. And they compared that to babies that were born before that and babies that were born after that. And the babies that were in their mother's womb when they mothers got inundated with the news that the United States had experienced this major attack, they had excessively elevated stress hormone levels, cortisol and others. This is exactly what the Way of Mastery is talking about here. When you decide to come into the physical world, you start focusing your consciousness on the physical reality of the fetus growing inside your mother, and you are influenced deeply, energetically, by all that's going on inside the mother, in her emotions, in the food she's choosing to eat, in the people she's interacting with, in the news stories that she's relating to. Because everything is just an energy field within an energy field within an energy field on ad infinitum. The text goes on here and says, many have used the word imprint to describe the initial state in which you become identified with the physiological form that's emerging out of the field of energy that is the particular matrix of the mixture of energies of the mother and the father. This is where you start. And again, you've done so in your mind in order to bring forth certain lessons. You've done this because of certain patterns held within the consciousness before you turned your attention to this physical dimension. For the vast majority of you who are reading this lesson, that descension, that quantum leap from the realm of pure spirit, from a different vibrational state into the vibrational state of the third dimension, it was a shock. It was so much of a shock that your awareness forgot yourself as pure spirit. Now, if the shock at conception is not sufficient, it could happen at any time during being in the womb. If there's any kind of trauma for the mother, if there's a psychological, physiological imbalance, if there's breathing experiences difficult, if there's any problem with the flow of nutrients in the body, if the mother is under even occasional acute emotional stress, then you will make an attempt to pull back away from the body in an attempt to rediscover the realm of spirit. And when you do this, the body of the fetus goes numb. That is, life force is withdrawn from it. As it grows, the nervous system adapts to the level of life force that is flowing through it. And that is what comes from you and not from another. So you are supplying through you are delivering the life force energy, the consciousness that is life force energy. And that's coming through you as a conduit, not from somewhere else, not from something, someone else. So that during this period of 9 months, you are in a particular universe where you are having a physical experience, which is not unlike one who is 60 years old in the physical dimension. You are experiencing the sensory realm of third dimensionality, and you are already being deeply influenced by psychic patterns that are not uniquely your own. As soon as you make that choice and you begin to focus on and concentrate on the physical realm is affecting your development and you're responding to it. You're an energy field within an energy field within an energy field. Someone in the chat room just asked, Dr. Tim, the pineal gland everyone talks about, you mentioned energy fields. Is there anything to it, or is it hype and a myth? You know, when Dr. Michael Rice talks about this, he likes to bring in a quote by Albert Einstein. And Michael has taken poetic license with the quote. The quote's originally something like that we experience this thing we call reality and we experience it as though we're separate from everyone and everything. And that experience of being separate from everyone and everything is like living in an optical delusion. Because everything is energy and all energy is connected. And if you believe you're separate from anyone or anything, you're kidding yourself, or you're only seeing a very small picture of the whole truth of what is. Like we've talked about this extensively. My five senses, your five senses, only allow you to get access to a tiny fraction of what's out there. Well, how do we know there's more out there if my senses can't detect them? Because we've got cameras and audio recording, and we've got evidence from our scientific instruments about infrared and ultraviolet and vibrational patterns that we can't hear with our ears because they're too low or too high. We have radio waves and x-rays and gamma and television waves. We can't see any of those or experience any of them with just our five senses. So our five senses are giving us a very tiny limited picture of all the energies that are out there swimming around us that we're swimming in, etc. And then our conscious logical mind can only register a tiny fraction of what our senses are picking up in any given moment. Everything is energy. All energy is connected. If you're having an experience of something as being solid matter, it means it's energy, which has been so lowered or slowed in its vibration to be perceptible to your senses. It's just energy. It's a different form of energy. So when somebody asks a question like, is this whole thing about the pineal gland, you know, just a fantasy or a myth? Well, is energy a myth, right? Is everything a myth? There's one way you could talk about it and say, yeah, it's just a myth. But another way of talking about it, it's very real to those who are perceiving with their five senses. Does that mean that's all that's there? No, there could be a lot more than just what your five senses are picking up. We know there's more than just what your five senses are picking up. So this thing they call a body is just an energy system. Therefore, this thing they call a pineal gland is just a part of the energy system. And if you treat the energy system well, if you give it the proper energy that we call food, fuel, nutrients, vibrational thought patterns, if you give it with your creative energy, with your mind energy, what it needs to function and flow properly, it can do amazing things. Miraculous things are present in every human being who is the miracle of life, the miracle of the energy of creation, expressing in a form that can be perceived through the senses. And what this book is telling us is that even before an individual becomes physical and therefore perceptible to the physical senses, they existed in consciousness. And they had experience and they made choices. So when somebody asks a question about the pineal gland or about my liver disease or about my broken bone, what we're talking about is an energy system that is perceptible to the senses. And at the highest level of practiced use of mind energy, it is quite likely that any human being can do what any medical professional would say was impossible and a miracle. If you could remove everything that didn't belong from your mind energy, body energy system, and have conscious direct access to awareness of your true nature as this miracle of life expressing in form, there probably wouldn't be much of anything you couldn't do. There probably wouldn't be much of anything that remained unhealed within you. Everything would start to flow and function as it was intended to from the original design. And we've had this debate come up. People have said, well, does that mean that it doesn't matter what I eat and I can eat garbage food and I can eat poison and this, that, and the other thing? And the way Dr. Michael Rice likes to answer that is to say, look, the highest of all beings could probably drink a glass of poison and not be affected. You know, they're talking about what Yeshua did was he let them rip his body to shreds and then rebuild it in 3 days. And, yeah, that's potential. He says, you know, what I've done you can do and greater. So that potential is probably there. And yet, if you're not practiced at it, if you haven't removed the negativity, the trauma energy, the false beliefs, if you're still living in the dream of separation, you're probably going to have a really hard time accomplishing those things. So, unless or until you can walk on water and walk through a wall, it probably makes sense to use energies that are known to be good for the body, whether that's good, clean, pure water and, you know, organically grown vegetables and fruits and nuts and get a proper amount of movement and watch your mind energy to make sure that you're focusing on and choosing, as the way of Master would say, choosing only your loving thoughts, choosing to share only your loving thoughts. That makes really good sense to do all of that with commitment, with vigilance, until you get to the point where you can drink a glass of poison without any ill effects, and you can walk on water, and you can walk through walls, and then it doesn't matter what you do. But until such time as you do that, it makes really good sense to eat only healthy foods, to do regular mental, emotional work consistently throughout your day, most days, if not every day, and treat your body with reverence. Get it some movement and exercise. Make sure it's well hydrated. Make sure it gets good rest. Make sure that you don't hold on to negative emotional energies that cause tightness and tension and shutting down of the systems that are designed to keep you healthy and keep you growing and strong. So until you reach the time when you can do miracles with just a thought, it makes really good sense to practice what the highest level of this work would say is silliness, because you don't really need to do all of that because you are just love and you are just the energy of creation. So then there's an extended question here. In the womb, we know traumas happen, and some people benefit because they then develop an ultra memory or ability to see things different, and some end up being autistic, etc. So my question is there a better way to attain the benefits without the traumas? I'm not sure if Michael wants to add also, but both of you are welcome to add in. Is there a better way to benefit than traumas? Yes, absolutely. But, you know, traumas, let's define the word trauma, right? This is a trauma is not an event, because some people experience the same event and they don't take trauma from it. Some people go into the war zone and they're there for 2, 3, 4 tours of duty, and they come home and they sleep like a baby and they aren't raging at their family and they're highly productive members of society and they don't have post-traumatic stress disorder. Other people take just one tour of duty and the outside person might say, hey, you know, they didn't go through anything like what their friend went through, and yet they've got post-traumatic stress. They've got flashbacks and nightmares and rage attacks and overwhelming anxiety, etc. So what is trauma? Trauma, one very useful definition for working with and helping people heal from or resolve the effects of past trauma is to say trauma is the energy that I download as I'm experiencing something. Now, we all download energies from everything we experience, so how is it different? Well, if I assume that there's a life event, here's a person living their life, and they've got a series of thoughts and beliefs about themselves and the world around them, and whether or not they are safe and whether or not certain people around them are safe, and that's just what they've got. Michael Rice would call it a personal code, et cetera. They've got these beliefs about themselves and the world and life, and they live their life based on that. And then here's an event that happens, and either in the middle of that event or soon after that event, that individual changes some of their fundamental beliefs about who they can trust in the world or whether or not they're safe or whether or not the world is safe. Then you can say that event was traumatic for that person. Why? Because that person downloaded some content, some energy, some trauma energy, some physical, mental, emotional shift energy that they formulated in such a way that had them change their fundamental beliefs about life. So it's an operational definition. If it doesn't operate that way, then it's not trauma. If it does operate that way, it's trauma. The example I like to give for people is the Oreo cookie trauma. So here's these two boys, they're identical twins, they're 5 years old, Johnny and Jimmy. And they're in a good family. They've got older siblings, you know, it's a good family. No parents are alcoholic or abusive. Everything's going along beautifully. And they come home one day after kindergarten with their backpacks on, they hit the front door. The thing is, Johnny has always known, and he thinks of it every morning when he gets up and all through the day and every night before he goes to bed, I can always trust my mother. My mother never lies to me. Jimmy doesn't even really think about that much. He's more into bugs and, you know, curiosity about how machines work. But Johnny is just really focused on how my mother always tells the truth. And I'm safe in the world because I know my mother will never lie to me. So they come home this one day, and as they come in the front door, they look across the room and they see on the kitchen table a plate of Oreo cookies. And Johnny bursts out, hey, Mom, can we have a cookie? And Mom calls down, or up from downstairs and says, boys, you know the routine. Go upstairs, unpack your backpacks, put out your homework, wash your hands, and come down, and then you can have a cookie. Remember I said it's a good family. So Johnny and Jimmy trot up the stairs. They're up there for a while, like five-year-olds will be. While they're up there, the teen and preteen kids come through the house like a food tornado, and they scarf up all the cookies and half the snacks in the in the pantry. Sometime later, Johnny and Jimmy come scampering down the stairs. They're three steps from the bottom of the stairs. Johnny looks over and sees an empty plate of cookies, and Johnny has got a trauma. Oh, my God, my mother lied to me. My life is never going to be the same. How could this happen? How could she let that happen? Jimmy, who's never really thought much about that, sees the empty plate of cookies, doesn't skip a beat, and says, "Hey, Mom, they ate the cookies. Can I have an apple? Can I have a candy bar?" Johnny took a trauma from this. Johnny feels like, "I can't trust my mother the way I always did." Is the plate of cookies being empty something that most people would call traumatic? No. By the definition that we use to help people, is that a traumatic experience? For Johnny, yes. For Jimmy, no. So, are there better ways to learn than trauma? Yes. We can learn constantly all day, every day, if we ask to be taught by life. So, we have the capacity to learn about ourselves and about our life in each new present moment if we will ask to be shown, if we go in understanding that we don't know everything. And therefore, whatever we think we know is either only partially true and perhaps even completely false. And every moment, when I make those two active observations, I leave myself open to learn something new. I can accelerate that process if I actually ask to be shown. I ask to be taught by life, by love, by creation itself. If I understand that whatever my conscious logical mind comes up with as thoughts about how this is bad and this is wrong and this shouldn't happen, that's all just garbage. It's coming from a tiny little mind trying to process a tiny little bit of what's actually present in life and coming up with a fantasy based on the original fantasy, the dream of separation. I think I'm not energy. I think I'm separate from the people around me. And as Einstein says, that means I'm functioning in an optical delusion. That delusion, by the way, is the root of how I create a prison for myself. How do I do that? By developing a special affection for certain people and situations closest to me, certain people and things closest to me. And Einstein says, that special feeling that I create, that determination I make that this person is special to me and this person is more important and I need this person to be happy, etc. I need this person in my life doing this, that, or the other thing in order for me to be happy, etc. Both statements can be true. That's how I create a prison for myself. And Einstein in his quote says, the way to end that prison, dissolve that prison, is to learn to extend that same loving, respectful, compassionate energy to everyone and all of creation. And if I can do that, I start to see things more accurately. I start to see that we're all products of the flow of life, that we're all connected, that we're all operating under this very, very limited input from the five senses and from the conditioning of our life experience and our traumas. Someone once said that if we could but know the secret pain of our enemies, it would be enough to dissolve all aggression. If we look out through our eyes and we see somebody as evil, bad, wrong, inhuman, horrible, any label, any name-calling label, then we can justify and rationalize for ourselves basically any level of abuse. And yet, if we look out and we understand we're all connected, anything I do to any of my brothers and sisters, I'm also doing to myself. I'm taking damage into my own heart if I hold anger before I even send it out or try and act out towards another. And any place where I can't extend loving energy and compassion in my life, it just means that I'm withholding that loving energy from the wounded part of my own heart that needs it most. It doesn't matter if somebody came along and did the most horrible thing I can imagine to me or someone I love. In the next moment, it would be possible for me, if I had worked at this long enough, to extend loving energy toward them, to see them as a person who's another being of brilliance and light just like I am, who has in the moment when they did this hurtful thing forgotten who they are or has yet to discover it. And so this is this violent, this hurtful, this disrespectful act, whatever I want to label it, it's just a call for help and healing from another part of myself, another part of consciousness and life flow. These teachings tell us that if I practice this enough, in the moment after someone does something that I would have labeled horrible and tragic and catastrophic, the next moment it's possible for me to see their true nature and extend my true nature to them, ignoring the false, the fear, the dream of separation conclusions. And in doing so, as Michael Rice says in his seven-step reality management worksheet, a principle of the universe is that by giving, I first get the original. So if I extend loving energy to somebody, I feel it. I get it in my energy system. I have it resonating where it can do the most good to heal. And in any part of my mind that wants to say, I can't feel loving energy toward my ex-wife and the way she dismantled the marriage and hurt my kids. And if I hold on to that and say, I can't feel loving energy, I can't send loving energy to her, it just means I'm refusing to send loving energy to the hurt part of my heart, my energy system. And I'm the one who suffers the most. I work with people on a regular basis, and they go through divorce, and they go through somebody cheating in their marriage, and then they're just wrought up with all of this. They're drinking the poison of anger and resentment and bitterness and vengeance. Meanwhile, the partner that they are so furious with is off on some Mexican vacation with their new love. And the person who feels wronged is amplifying and heaping pain and suffering upon themselves as they sit and spew venom out into the world and have hurtful, raging thoughts about their partner. This work invites us to recognize the truth of that, the truth of the science/physics of our lives, and recognize that energy is energy is energy. And what we choose to hold on to, value, and pour our mind energy into, what we choose to strengthen as the energies in our lives, we get the effect first. We are doing that to ourselves. We are amplifying that energy within ourselves. And that's the only thing that's causing that in this moment, my set of conclusions, my pouring my mind energy into a belief that I was wronged, that that situation is what's causing my pain or my fear or my sadness, etc. As the Course in Miracles says, and the Way of Mastery says, you're never upset for the reason you think you are. Whatever your mind is telling you when you're upset is a lie. It's at best a fundamental distortion. And if I want to see something clearly, if I want to understand the truth of my life, if I want to understand what's the next best, next right thing I can do for myself or anybody that I'm interacting with, especially someone I say I love or had love for or cared for or cherished, the most important thing for me to do is reset Rachma and Kubba. Reset the filter in my mind over my intentions. Reset it to Rachma so that I can only intend loving things. And only intentions keyed to love can be used as the building blocks of my goals, which means I can only do things keyed to love. And I reset Kubba, which is this filter in the mind over perception, which allows me to perceive closer to accurate, maybe never 100% accurate because of the limitations of my five senses, but closer to accurate allows me to perceive the truth of life unfolding. And even if I have someone in front of me who's raging and name-calling and taking me back to court for things that I didn't do, and I can see in the middle of that, I can see an energy field within an energy field within an energy field. I can see the pain, the fear, and the sadness that must be going on in them, that they're using anger and striking out at other people to hide from themselves. And then in the next moment, I can extend the love to them that's going to first heal me, heal my energy system, bring me back to wholeness, bring me back into resonance with my true nature as love. Thank you for the questions from the chat room. And we have time for a comment or question. If you had your hand up earlier and you want to try that again, maybe the technology will allow us to talk. 563-999-3581. Call that number and press 1. We'll try this again. Area code 541. I hear something this time.
Yes, I couldn't get to my mute button fast enough earlier. I really wanted to stay and listen to the rest of your wake-up sheet, but there were commitments that I had to get back to the farm for. I was wondering if you, I think you'd gotten to the goal that you'd set up when I had to leave. I was wondering how that went for you.
So you're referring to the worksheet that I personally did in the support group last night?
Yeah, in the support group last night. Thank you.
So I went from a level 7 upset of sadness and irritation down to about a level 3 at the end of the worksheet. And probably by the time I left the office last night, I was down to a 1 or a 0. I did not have more thoughts about it through the evening. I did not wake up with thoughts about it in the morning. And my goal for myself moving forward is 2 more worksheets related to things that came up in that set of memories when I was doing the processing of canceling the thought and the goal. So it was quite productive.
Oh, I'm glad, because I really would have liked to have stayed. Okay, thank you so much. And I think that's the only question I have this morning. I really appreciate your whole conversation this morning. It seems like when I get on the radio show, if I have any issue that I'm dealing with, that next show will pretty much at least point my nose in the right direction. And I think I also have a prominent nose, too.
All right. Well, I appreciate the call. I'm glad you were able to get on this time and get your mute button fixed. Anything else you want to add in our last 5 minutes?
No, I think I'm good for this moment. We need to run off on another commitment, so I will leave you and listen to the show as I work on the other commitments. Thank you.
All right, blessings. I will mute you so you can listen to the second hour. You know, we have another support group coming up tomorrow. I can't promise you that someone will be doing a worksheet or that I will, but it is very common for us to do worksheets in those support groups. And I'm always thrilled when people decide to join us or pass the information along to somebody else that might benefit from that. That'll be for tomorrow night from 6:30 to 9 p.m. Central Time, and it is all the information you or anybody would need is available on the MindShiftersAcademy.org website. And I will mention again that I'm wide open to suggestions about people that you think I should read their book or interview them or listen to their podcast as a potential interview for interviewee for the On Your Mind podcast by Journey's Dream. And if you have any of those to pass along, please give us a call directly on the show or send me an email at tjh@mindshifters-academy.org. And I'll look into it because it's one of the easier ways for me to find good interviewees or potential topics to explore. Otherwise, it's mostly a one-man job trying to find new people to interview and get them lined up. And if you know somebody who's written a book or you've read a book that was really impactful, anything related to mental health issues, anything related to the kinds of things we talk about on Mind Shifters Radio, I'd be happy to get that feedback from you, that input from you. Area code 360, you're in the air. Who do we have?
Hi, Dr. Tim, it's Julia. I just wanted to let you know about a gentleman named Jason Amoroso, and it's Amoroso, and he just started a YouTube channel, and it's called The Way of Mastery Podcast with Jason Amoroso. And so every day he does like a 5 to 7 minute lesson, you know, and he started with at the beginning, so people might be interested in that. And I thought of him as being someone you might want to interview.
All right, I just found it. Thank you. I'll look into that.
Awesome. Great show, as always. Thank you for all you do. I really appreciate it. And I love
the
way
you
master.
Thank you, Julia, for the kind words. And I will mute you so you can listen to our second hour. And I'll look into the Jason podcast about Way of Mastery. We're down to our last minute or so I'll remind us all that we come from love. We're made of the stuff we call love. We actually are love, and everything else is false. Welcome, Jeannie Rice.
Thank you, Dr. Tim. I appreciate you. I was late getting in, so I didn't catch a lot of your show, but I know it was good.
Well, and we did our best to address the questions that you're seeing there in the chat room. And so Michael might want to chime in on something about the physiology, but we talked about it as all energy, et cetera. So have a great show.
Okay, awesome. Thank you. So welcome, everybody, to the second hour of Mindshifters Radio. And today is Wednesday, April the 17th, 2024. And our call-in number is 563-999-3581. And press 1, and that puts you in the queue to talk to us. And we'd love to hear your comments and questions because that makes this your show. And while we're waiting for Michael to dial in, I will just tell you that we are adding some things on our YouTube channel. They're called shorts. They're like 30 to 60 seconds. And We have found out that one of the ways that we can get monetized, which we're not yet, is that we have to have 10,000 views. And that sounds like a lot. However, yesterday I had uploaded 6 videos. Today I've uploaded 6 more. And just on the 6 that we had for yesterday, we've already got like 1,500 views on it. So that's awesome. So you can go to our YouTube channel and you can get to that. You can either type in youtube.com/Michael Rice, or if you're on our website, there is a YouTube link at the top. You can click on that and it will take you to the channel. And then go over and click on Shorts. It'll open up on videos, but then there's another little link right beside of videos that says Shorts, and click on that and give some of those a watch and a like, and we appreciate your support in that manner. And so I'm going to start Podbean here, and I'm going to welcome Michael.
Thank you, dear heart, and welcome, everybody. And if you go to YouTube, it would be nice to assist us, if you would, in watching some of the longer videos, the full-length videos, which, you know, some of them are 3-4 minutes long, and others are 3 hours. And so if you watch those, every like gives us a leg up on stepping up to the next level of operating on YouTube. And that means that, you know, the fact that 5 years ago we stopped traveling and that was a major source of our cash flow, if we get to a certain level and we're getting close to that, then YouTube becomes what they call monetized, and they start to pay us for our content rather than us giving them those hundreds of videos free. So if you'd like to help us with that, it would be nice to go and listen and like. Join the channel. And beyond that, we're honored that you're here. It's a privilege to continue this conversation and to have so many different people's perspectives and inputs in winnowing our way through this Aramaic understanding and determining just what carries people into, out of the mindset of hostility and fear, the mindset of blame, into a mindset of connectedness, of responsibility, and perception based in, fueled by, the active presence of love. Remembering that whenever I, you know, our core concept of the work, whenever I think or speak as though something outside of me is a cause of what's moving inside of me, I'm in denial. And when I enter denial, I dissociate from the content of my own mind. In other words, I hide the truth from myself. And when we do that, we live in a fantasy world. And of course, in that fantasy world, everybody else is the problem in our lives because we've hidden the real problem from ourselves. Now, Carl Jung talked about the shadow, and it's been referred to by many different names down through the ages, this shadow self, this shadow side. So when we refuse to deal with traumatic energies within us, then those energies that are hidden will come up and distort the perceptual mind. So the part of ourselves that we've cut ourselves off from, in turn, is projected into our brain's images, dreams, fantasies of others. I remember working with a woman many years ago, and it was a real learning point for me as she shared what she discovered. And I certainly appreciate the discoveries that everybody shares with us in terms of doing one's work. But this woman was in an intimate situation with her husband, and she caught herself, because while she was in that intimate situation with her husband, she was fantasizing about another man. And the moment that she caught herself doing that. I mean, this was something she shared in a session, to doing some forgiveness work around. The moment that she caught herself in that fantasy, she had such guilt that she instantly hid it from herself. But what she caught herself doing was then her mind went to, oh, I wonder if my husband's cheating on me. And so when we deny something that's moving inside of us, that which we deny gets projected into our brain's images, dreams, fantasies. Again, those three things. And they seem to be about others. Now, you remember when we were going through the Aramaic definitions, in that ancient Aramaic language, these aberrant states of mind that when they are active, control attitude, words, emotions, perceptions, and behavior, they were called devan or demons. Now, the Greek had their own pantheon of demons, and they had people chasing these non-existent external creatures, and people are still doing it today. Oh, the devil made me do it. One gentleman I was working with recently, he was just like, my family is under attack. And he starts to explain what's going on with mom, what's going on with dad, what's going on with him. And he says, it's like your family isn't under attack. It's in denial. You've dissociated from the content of your own mind, so it's coming back to attack you, and you pretend that there's something out there that's there to get you. In Aramaic, it was the casting out of demons. You remember one in particular they talked about was this demon called fear. What do they say? Perfect love casts out fear. It wasn't about casting out these evil entities. It was about resolving the thought disorders in the mind rather than thinking these projections of one's own dissociated mind were real external forces. So when we populate our perception with these constructs, these dissociated constructs, and in the ancient teachings they called that mind the mind of man, when we populate it with false images, sometimes it's even diagnosed as PTSD, in order to scapegoat, pretend that others are the cause of what's moving in us, and bingo, what do we have? We have enemies. Now we hallucinate a world of enemies, and anyone who triggers what we don't want to deal with tends to become the enemy. Now, if I have the tools and I'm doing my work, and let's imagine somebody shows up. Let's give a list of descriptors of this person. This person's behavior was disgusting, nasty, wicked, horrible. You know, the whole realm of descriptors. And guess what? If you run into somebody who accurately, that's actually true about them, that's what they're doing. If you're functioning as a human being, if you're functioning as the created essence of love, you'll look at that and go, wow, that person's really got some stuff going on. But if you look at that person, or you think you're looking at that person, and all of a sudden you go nuts. Oh, when they did that, they made me so angry, and they just enraged me. That's like, excuse me? No, if they are all those things you say they are, and you are functioning as a human being, then you look at them with a mind of compassion and love, period. However, if that person you give all those descriptors to, accurate or inaccurate, match what you've dissociated from in your own mind, then all of a sudden, the internal pain starts to move. Dissociated from the pain, I hallucinate, construct a picture that makes me believe that my pain is caused by something happening outside of me. So in antiquity, experiencing through a mind filled with dissociated thought disorders was metaphorically described as seeing through as though through a glass darkly. It was spoken of as being lost in the desert. In some cultures, they called it the wolf or the trickster or the wily coyote. Different names they had for this hiding of one's own mind from oneself, never facing yourself directly. People who play this game think they can live a normal life and pretend there are no skeletons in their own closets. But these states of mind symbolize parts of ourselves that in most family systems have been disowned and kept in the dark. And when you realize the human mind is designed to be fueled by love, these dark, unresolved conflicts over generations become the root of perceptions, literally reflecting the mental illness of fear and hostility. So if someone does a behavior, and I label it, and I get into how it's all their fault, if I wake up from my own shadow, my own projection, I go, oh, I'm feeling this because, yes, that person did those. Let's say it's absolutely accurate that they actually did do those behaviors, and they were just pure lowlife. Those behaviors will have no impact on you unless there's something in you based in lowlife energy. And if there is something in you based in that lowlife energy, then guess what? You resonate somebody into your space to do what you're hiding from yourself. And this is especially true, let's say, in relationship with children. You remember my favorite tongue-in-cheek line about children? Having a child is like having your unconscious mind hang out in true living color and Dolby sound. Everything that you've never dealt with, they're going to bring up in you. They're going to play out. People come together in relationships not realizing that they're coming together through resonance, through their unconscious matching bags of garbage, start out and they call their relationship a love relationship, and then they want to tear each other's eyeballs out when the honeymoon is over. That is, when each one has triggered what's in the other one that the other one doesn't want to deal with. And so recognizing that if I'm standing in front of something that my mind says, this enrages me, that I have dissociated rage in my mind. That's my shadow. That's the part of me that unless I go directly inside, unless I have a technology, unless I know how to collapse the projected image on them and come back into direct relationship with my own shadow, my own dissociated side, I really believe that what I'm feeling is about them, when in fact they've shown up in response to resonance energy, resonate those things in me that I haven't dealt with, so I get the chance to move through them. And the purpose of life is to kick us right square in the limitation to show us what we're holding on to. So having a child that comes out of the same genetic structure as you do, everything you've never dealt with is in their structure, only they don't have a stop button. And all punishment on the part of a parent is an effort to wire in a stop button so the child will not do what resonates what's in the adult. If the child were going to do something that was out of line for the child and it did not match anything in the adult would stand there as a state of active love. There would be no punishment involved in any way, shape, or form. There would simply be guidance given to the child. But the parent who goes into a rage and says, I'm only doing this because it hurts me more than it does you. I'm only doing it because I, quote unquote, love you. Is dealing with their own shadow projected into the brain image of the child. And then, of course, once you enter into a relationship, and, you know, one of the reasons or the main reason why they warned us, those who understood how energy systems work, the reason they warned us about being promiscuous wasn't because of what genitals do. It was because each time you intercourse with someone, you exchange genes. Now they've got access to your unconscious mind. You've got access to theirs. And in that case, if either or both partners are not doing their work, they'll soon be singing the song of the honeymoon is over. And what's wrong with you? Look what you've done to me. You're the problem in my life. I never had any problems before I met you. Right. That is, you'd never looked at your shadow side until you found someone who matched it and resonated it for you. So the beauty of understanding that, the reason I'm talking about this is that when I run into someone who can show me that, and how do I tell whether it's mine or not? I'm the one who's feeling it. There's a little story that I haven't told for a long time that actually is one of Jeannie's favorite stories that I tell when I do workshops, and that's about the little old lady who loves movies. She loves to go to the theater. And she hears about this new film coming to town. She leaves home early. She's going to get there, get her front row favorite front row seat. She's a little hard of hearing, doesn't see very well. But there's a traffic jam up, and she gets lost, stuck in traffic. She ends up getting to the theater late and ends up with the last seat right in the very back of the theater. And there's this young couple sitting right in front of her. She's having trouble hearing and seeing anyway, and this young couple throughout the whole film is just laughing and talking, laughing hysterically. And finally, the little old lady reaches over and jabs this girl in the shoulder and says, "Young lady, are you feeling hysterical?" She kind of looks at the lady and she says, well, he was feeling mine first. You can't feel anybody else's. If you're feeling it, it's not because that person is whatever your descriptors are, how terrible they are. It's because that energy that you are feeling is being resonated in you. And the genius of this man Yeshua 2,000 years ago to come along and explain all of that and show us specifically how to collapse the projected hidden parts of our minds, come back into direct relationship with the dissociated content, and bring it forward in the presence of love for healing is just monumental. As far as I know, there's nowhere else on the planet that it exists. There are philosophies. I know that, like, the Buddhist philosophy is very deeply into non-attachment. You know, don't be attached to outcomes. Don't be attached to things. Several years ago, we ended up being invited to do a workshop at a center that was run by a gentleman who was a refugee from Tibet. He was a man who was considered to be the verified reincarnation of the Buddha of wisdom. And when I taught him the forgiveness worksheet, the forgiveness process, he's like, well, we have non-attachment, but we never had this thing of you cancel a goal in order to access your own hidden pain. And it's such a genius piece of information for people who are willing to do the work of healing. And so that's our a brief summation of what we're here to do. And delighted that you're here to lend an ear so that we can expand this energy out on a global scale. And Miss Jeannie, do we have anybody in the phone queue with a hand up or anything happening in the chat room?
We do have a hand up. And in the chat room is Sean, and he had sent us an email, so we can address that later. But this is Bob. Okay. Welcome from Down Under.
Well, hey there, Bob. How are you doing, sir? Good to hear from you.
Yeah, it's good. And again, it's just synchronicity. It's 20 past three here in the morning. And yeah, my body woke me up and I just logged, you know, got on the computer and you were live. And I thought, well, this is meant to be. So what I'd just like to do is talk to what you've been talking about, like fear and
great,
how it can drive you. And an update on my dance with prostate cancer. And
right.
Yeah. Well, when I realized that I had prostate cancer, I asked myself this question. Okay, Bob, you've created this event in your life. What's the lesson you need to learn from it? And almost immediately I got back an answer from the universe saying that the universe said to me, Bob, it's time for you to put up or shut up. You either fold back into your old programming and go under the Western medical knife, or you walk your talk, which is Nature is nurture. Let food be thy medicine, and medicine be thy food. And you know, it's a sort of I got it. But I was still embodying a lot of fear around the word cancer because both my parents died of it. And
the big program in the culture for sure.
Yeah, yeah, and yeah, it is, isn't it? And I think it's what drives a lot of people to actually take all these Western procedures. And what I realized was that for me, with my life experience, looking at the Western medical model, it is really, really focused on ameliorating the symptoms, and they're not really interested in finding cures, because curing people is bad for business. And and all the procedures I've gone through recently, all the MRIs and CT scans and da-da-da-da-da, has been making money for somebody. Anyway, yesterday I had a call. I've recently had a PET scan, and it said, you know, I've got a very aggressive form of prostate cancer, but it hasn't spread to the kidneys, liver, or bones, but it has escaped from the prostate. And so I had a call from the radiologist about, you know, future treatments. And he was saying, you know, they wanted to go in and burn all these tumors, and there was some in the lymph nodes and blah, 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 blah. And I just said, well, hang on a minute, bro. I'm the project manager of this particular exercise, and I've already, 6 weeks ago, I started my own natural healing protocol with things like chlorine dioxide and borax and baking soda and apricot kernels. And so what I want to do is see how that goes. So if you can recommend a test that I can measure my progress and see if it's successful, then we'll do that. And as soon as I said chlorine dioxide, he went, oh, but you're drinking bleach. And I said, no, mate. You know, like, I've used this in the past. Since 2005, I've used chlorine dioxide when needed. And, you know, I said, do your own research and don't knock it till you've tried it, you know. It's another example of these experts that focus on something so narrow that they're not aware of there's a great big world of other stuff out there. And these natural remedies have been around for centuries, you know. So, yeah, so it was quite funny. And my closing comment to the guy was, well, he said, well, good luck. You know, sort of good luck with what you're doing. Maybe I'll see you again in the future. And I said, well, it would be nice to have a chat with you, Tim, but I doubt if you will see me again in the future. Because one thing I realized was there was a phase in this little journey of mine where I was down in the dumps and going, oh, dear God, you know, pity me, you know, I've got cancer and blah, blah. And then I just realized, well, hey, you know, I'm bowing to the beast. I'm bowing to the beast. What I need to be is joyful and energized and ebullient and, you know, and keep my energy up. And I am, you know, I'm really looking at this as it's an exciting adventure, and I'm learning so much about how my body works. And my body is giving me great signs that I'm making progress. The chlorine dioxide is getting rid of something in my body, because I can see it in my urine. You know, I can see cloudy deposits, and they're just the ash of the dead cells that the chlorine dioxide is destroying. And
right.
How else can I put it? Yeah, I've started taking chlorine dioxide baths, and all the purple blotches on my arms have gone. I had an ear infection for 6 months that wouldn't go, and that's disappeared, and my sinuses have all cleared up. So yeah, it's an exciting journey. And yeah,
you're moving in the right direction.
I think the way I look at it, when I look at all the side effects that they list from the treatments they offered, like loss of muscle mass, decreased bone density, loss of cognitive function, why would you? It's a no-brainer, you know. And if I die, at least, you know, I'm going to die under my own terms. But it's just reinforced my belief in me. And it's like, yeah, I've got to walk my own road on this one. So, and I've done it before, and I'll do it again. So that's where I am. And it was getting out of that
fear. Well, extending love in your direction, holding the space.
Yeah, well, it's great to be able to share this with you guys, you know, because there aren't many people that listen to a crazy man like me.
Well, it doesn't sound crazy at all to me. My younger brother, I think I shared with you before. I don't know whether you guys ever talked, but, about 12 years ago, and they gave him a year, and he's gone totally, completely natural right across the board, and he's still just rocking on and healthy. In fact, I talked to him the day before yesterday. They're getting ready to go on vacation to Scotland, and he's been – they told him 10 years ago he'd be dead, and he said, I think I'll do this. And fortunately, he was, you know, with the question you asked this gentleman about, well, have you got a test that will keep me on track? My brother fortunately did find a medical doctor who said to him, I don't agree with what you're doing at all, but I will, you know, be your caretaker here. I'll be your physician and keep you on track and keep testing to make sure you're moving in the right direction. And the guy has just been amazed. He's like, I can't believe my eyes, but you're doing it, you know? So that's been the result of his going. He's worked primarily with a naturopath, and it's been a pretty incredible journey for him.
Yeah, I tried to get hold of him. I phoned a couple of times, but I've had trouble with Skype. But one thing I've done with my GP and all these specialists that I've met, I've just reminded them that in this relationship, they are nothing more than hired contractors, and they don't like that. But that was the reminder. Yes, you know, you are specialists and you're very clever and all that. But actually, the contract between us is, I have hired you to provide me with data. Yeah, and that's sort of that, and it's true, isn't it? You know, I've paid for their services.
Absolutely. In the early days of doing this work, excuse me, go ahead.
No, you're fine.
There's a bit of a delay. In the early days of doing this work, and many people who are on the radio show will remember Angie, who was, when I met her, a little Italian lady in her 70s. She had had polio as a kid, had post-polio syndrome, and at one point she was on an examining table, and doctors examining her, and she's had a foot that was damaged from polio, and this woman's about, she was about maybe 4'10", just this little fireball of an Italian lady, and there were two doctors consulting, and they're standing there like she doesn't exist, like she isn't in the room, you know, like she's a lump of meat. So, well, I think what we'll do is we'll take off the front of her foot, and then just see how she progresses from there. And Angie got up off the table and kind of poked the guy, who, of course, being 4'10" or so, was much bigger than she, poked the guy and said, when you get on the table and after they cut the front of your foot off, then you can cut the front of mine off, but not until. And she walked out of his office.
Yeah.
She was a pretty spunky little lady. And she outlived all of their predictions by a decade.
Yeah, and for me, it's kind of sad that most people, you know, just fold into the fear and look to the doctors for their salvation. But for me, and I came across a strange statistic the other day from an American official organization, that the biggest cause of death in America was medical intervention. So that says a lot, doesn't
it? That's right. Number three cause of death is properly prescribed medication and treatment. Okay. If that doesn't get your attention, you're not paying attention, right? And it's tough. You know, the brainwashing in the culture with fear is so profoundly powerful. And it's definitely, you know, as I said earlier from the Aramaic, that it's literally, they said, perfect love casts out fear. It is literally, in the Aramaic sense of the word, demon. And not in the Greek sense. It's got all these little creatures running around chasing us, but those projections of our own minds, it's all an interesting wake-up call.
What struck me is one of my life principles is keep it simple, sovereign. Yeah, I know I changed it because I found that the words I choose to use create my reality. So keep it simple, sovereign. And then looking at all this stuff that they've been throwing me, it's just so complicated and complicated. And I thought, well, you know, this is all headspace stuff. It's not heart space. And now my solution is so simple. You know, it's chlorine dioxide, takes 5 minutes to prepare, cost me $30 for 3 months, you know, supply. And it's so simple. And the other thing I noticed, because I like delving back, was that the Rockefellers have been running or steering the Western medical model since the 1920s, you know, and they're not doing it out of love, are they?
Yeah.
No.
look up the Flexner Report. Have you heard of the Flexner Report?
I have now. I'll do some research.
Well, check it out. Yeah, Flexner was a minister, actually, that was hired by John B. to go around and do a survey. Why he chose a minister, I don't know. He had no medical training, but he was sent around to assess the schools of medicine in America, which back then were primarily naturopathic and homeopathic, and basically wrote a report that with Rockefeller and his money, we're able to basically wipe out the idea of natural healing. And lo and behold, they just happen to have this company called Standard Oil, and they figured out how they could take these molecules of oil and turn them into things they called drugs. And it was worth billions to them, and, you know, now it's trillions, and the game goes on. But the Flexner Report is pretty interesting to see the circumstances in which that was set up. It's pretty bizarre.
Well, what makes me giggle, in a sick way, I suppose, well, for one, we don't have a healthcare system. We have a disease management system. But to actually believe that by ingesting a chemical, a petrochemical, by its very nature is toxic, to believe that putting a toxin in your body is going to be good for you. And that's, I don't know, what's cognitive dissonance or insanity, I don't know.
Yeah, a little of both, I'd say. A little of both. Yeah. And of course, that doesn't mean there's never a place for a drug. There are places where a drug can save a life. There's a difference between saving a life or eradicating symptoms and healing, unfortunately. And in many cases, the treatment can be, you know, supportive and assisting, especially if alongside of treatment is laid the healing option and people do their healing work.
I've got a classic example, quick one, because I don't want to take up too much of your time. But when I had my panic attack in November 1984, and my body was thrashing around, you know, and I couldn't function in that state. So I went to the doctor, and he put me on some benzodiazepines, Ativan, I think it was. And it should have been for 2 weeks, but it ended up being a 20-year cycle of antidepressants. Now, for 2 weeks would have been great because, you know, it sort of cut me off from those overwhelming feelings that I was having, and I was able to function.
Right.
But looking back at that event, it made me realize that what was frightening me was the actual power of these feelings that I was having and the power of the message that I was getting from my body. And then I realized that the power of those feelings was simply a measure of how powerful I am as a human being, as a spiritual being. So it's,
right.
And it was through embracing those feelings and getting rid of the antidepressants, the long-term ones, that I actually was able to heal, because it was through releasing those trapped feelings that I finally found healing.
Yep. You start to deal with your shadow, as we've been talking about. That's
yeah,
it. And most people want to pretend there's no such thing in me. You know, it's only they that have the shadow. It's like, right, okay.
Yeah, well, I've started a local support group aimed at suicide prevention, which I reckon is too little too late. I'm more focused on depression recovery, like get people, you know, before they get the knife out and, you know, just feeling a bit down. And that's going good. It's called On the Mend. And we meet every Wednesday.
Nice.
And I do a Zoom Saturday. So, yeah, and it's great. It's great. Yeah, I love it.
Awesome.
I love being alive.
Well, I join you in being alive, extending love in your direction, and appreciate what you're doing to bring healing to the world. Bring your genius forward. And appreciate you sharing with us.
And thank you for sharing your platform with me. So that for me, every time I talk about what's going on for me, a little healing takes place, which is why I believe that simply by sharing our stories, we help to heal each other. So I treasure your presence in my life. And thank you very much.
Returned. Absolutely returned. Are you familiar with a book called Illusions by Richard Bach?
I'd have to get a bigger sheet of paper.
It's a short book. And it's a quick read, a very entertaining read. It's called Illusions, The Adventures of a Reluctant Messiah. And it's a story about a guy who basically is, you know, the Messiah, and he's a mechanic in, you know, some town in America, and how he deals with trauma around him. But one of the lines in the book, it's written by Richard Bach, is that we teach best that which we most need to learn. So here we are doing it. That's it.
Yeah, precisely.
We teach what we need to learn, so... Honored and delighted to be sharing the planet with you, sir.
Thank you so much for being there.
All right. Appreciate your laugh. Have a blessed one. There you go. Yeah, that's it. All right. Take care. Blessings. Okay. Bye-bye.
Cheers.
Cheers. Sweet. Well, Miss Jeannie?
We do not
like
have another hand up, so let's address Sean's question.
Yes.
So I'd send that to you. Do you want me to read it? Or?
Sure, go ahead and read it. I'll go ahead and look it up on my email as well.
Okay. So, and I'm not sure, but the way that I read it, there may be a little mix up on, you know, let me read the question. I was trying to get the concept of the two mind filters. Can they also be called spirits? Like when Jesus said, we don't know what spirit we are of. One of the unconscious and the other of the conscious, right? One controls the goals output and the other only allows certain goals. Is that right? I feel like if I can get this concept internalized, it would help me to identify other processes. With most things Michael talks about, I can see a church equivalent, but I do see his chemistry and thought pattern way of teaching is the actual, quote, how it works, unquote, of what the Christians claim they know. On my own, I began to research the concept of Satan and prayer. Praying helps put the mind in the correct mode, I believe. I don't really think there are angels that carry our English words back and forth to God. Are there angels in some kind of capacity, or is that a misconception also? And so I can see the three filters, you know, that are over the perception and intentions, but then there's also the conscious, unconscious, and subconscious. So there's two different things.
Right, right. Well, several things, Sean, that you trigger with these ideas or with this writing. One, in Aramaic, and I don't know if you've been on a show where we've talked about this, but the word prayer in Aramaic has nothing to do with putting our order into the cosmic gift catalog. The word actually means to set a trap for God, God being love, and recognizing from a physics perspective that, you know, I have a TV antenna on my roof, and if that antenna is the right shape, the arms are the right length, and they're oriented properly, then that antenna is a trap that captures the signal from channel 2 that I then get to watch on my TV. I get a beautiful picture and sound. If somebody goes up on the antenna and bends the arms and turns the antenna backward, my beautiful signal is going to disappear, and I'm going to get some kind of a mess in my TV. So the antenna is a trap for a frequency. When the disciples said to Yeshua, teach us to pray, they were asking about something they did not understand. And, of course, he didn't say a prayer. What's called the Lord's Prayer is not a prayer. It's a set of instructions. And the instructions are, here's how you align and orient yourself so that you fulfill your role as a true human being, where you live, move, and have your being in this energy field called love. And being oriented and aligned properly, you capture or you trap that energy and you reflect it into the world. That's the meaning of the word prayer. In Aramaic, my best understanding of the word angel is that angel is thoughts from the Creator, literally mind energy directly transmitted to us from the Creator, that we're capable of capturing that. And that, so angelic thoughts would be thoughts that would be connected to the active presence of love. So the two filters, actually there are three filters over the frontal lobes of the brain and three filters over the back. They're matching. And the three filters are, and we've talked often about Rachna. Rachna is a filter over the frontal lobes of the brain that is also a gateway. One, it's a gateway for love, our human essence, to enter our human forms. There are lots of people running around that there is no human life in them because that gateway is closed. They are human, but in terms of function, that human, that presence of active love doesn't enter them because that gateway is closed. That's the first function of Rachma as a gateway. And then its function as a filter is over the frontal lobes of the brain so that only intentions, in the frontal lobes of the brain, intentions are stored. Only intentions keyed to love can pass through that filter. The other two qualities of intentions that can be held in the mind are those which are negative or destructive. There are three filters, and each filter, when active, excludes the output of the other two. So in Rachma, love, that filter is active. Only units of energy or information keyed to intentions that are in harmony with love will become available. If fear is active, then only destructive intentions become available. If hostility is active, then only, pardon me, I've got that reversed. If hostility is active, destructive intentions. If fear is active, negative intentions. So there are three qualities of intentions, destructive, negative, and those keyed to love. Rachma being active allows only those that are keyed to love to be passed to the mind, to be used as raw material for goals. And there's a schematic that we have in the mind that gives you a visual of this. And Jeannie's probably already put it in the notes, but if she would, so you can grab it there. And once our intentions are established, based in love, being the raw material of goals, we select from a variety of intentions, and when we choose one to commit to, we actually change the intention into a goal. And goals in the human mind are what drive perception. That's why the forgiveness process is so intimately connected with goals. Because if I set a goal and someone violates it, and that goal relates in the perceptual part of the mind to some form of hostility or fear, then even a goal keyed to love can trigger hostility or fear, i.e., the person who, when the parent was whipping them, is told, I'm only doing this because I love you. In the child's mind, their definition of love becomes being whipped. So there's a corollary filter over perception, which is at the base of the brain, three matching filters. The one that, in Aramaic, the word for the filter that relates to love over perception is kubba. The two filters, rachma and kubba together, are what were called perfect love. And that's what they said, cast self fear. In other words, when rachma and kubba are active, anything based in a fear energy is excluded from the mind. It's removed. The other two filters over perception are, again, hostility and fear. If hostility is active, then one is going to be irritated no matter what the object of attention is. You know, we have a saying in this culture that relates to that, he got out of bed on the wrong side this morning. What does he mean? That means he's got the hostility filter active in his mind. No matter what he looks at, the data in his mind is filled with irritation, so he's going to be, quote-unquote, irritated by that, his projection that the irritation is outside rather than inside. If fear is the active filter, then the only perceptual quality that the mind can generate is that of something threatening. So the filters are designed to determine the quality of raw data available for intentions, and then the quality of output energy that upon which our perceptions are based. So you could speak of them as spirits if you're living in the spirit of fear, or if the spirit of love has captured you. Yeah, I think that would be a very appropriate way to say it. And then, as Jeannie said, the conscious and unconscious, the next idea that you have here, one is of the conscious and the other is the unconscious. Not really, no. It is a separate thing. So these filters are operative on qualities of information that move. The conscious, unconscious, we're now talking about literally information that's stored in the mind. And you know, there's only, when we're referring to this, what we call the mind, and actually it truly isn't the mind, but what we call the mind is simply the action of the movement of energy in brain cells. And there are three levels or amplitudes at which that energy can move. You know, if I say don't think about the color of your car, I just added some energy through resonance through your ear into your brain, and something resonates about the color of your car. So, in effect, what I did was added energy or turned up the amplitude of the brain cells you have relating to the color of your car. And if I said, what's your favorite item of clothing? I just resonated a different set of brain cells, and now those brain cells come to the conscious level. A moment ago, they were subconscious. And notice as you're thinking about, you know, your favorite item of clothing, nothing about the color of your car is moving. And so the brain cells that were amplified a moment ago by my statement, don't think about the color of your car, recede back to the subconscious level as the brain cells about your favorite item of clothing. What's the front door of your house look like? Visualize in full color and detail what the front door of your house looks like. That's information that's stored in the subconscious mind. And I, with my question, resonate those brain cells, and the subconscious becomes conscious. The color of your car becomes subconscious. So conscious and subconscious are always changing places. The filters impact what qualities of information are allowed to come to awareness in response to stimulus, like what's the color of your car or the front door of your house look like. And then those who live in denial and dissociation, those who live in a world where they say, you made me mad, in order to believe that something outside of me is the cause of mad inside of me or anger, I literally have to hallucinate a lie that shows me that something outside of me is the cause of what's moving inside of me. And so I have to hide or dissociate from those brain cells that contain anger. And therefore, I've created an artificial condition for myself as a human being, and I have now an unconscious mind, something that I have difficulty or cannot access. And so I usually demonstrate that one by just asking people the question. So what is it that is the biggest challenge in your life, the thing that's the most traumatic thing that you need to work through? What is it that you really need to go for and move through? And then notice what's happening with your breath. And for most people, when they're asked that question, they stop breathing because that's unconscious. And the way they keep information from firing at an amplitude strong enough to become consciously aware of it, they hold the breath. That allows us to hide things from ourselves and create this unnatural, unconscious condition. So the filtering system filters things on all levels, conscious, subconscious, unconscious. So they'd be two separate, totally separate things would be my take. And so I hope that makes sense. You know, when they said take care of the heart, for out of it are the issues in life, they were saying take care of the unconscious, take care of what you're hiding from yourself. And I'm just reading through the rest of your note. Go ahead.
He says Michael needs to convert this to a newsletter. This is the fulfillment of what Jesus came to teach about love and living in the body and beyond. But he had to wait for all of us to catch up. The farmers and fishermen could never understand. It wasn't their fault. It would be like explaining a starship to the founding fathers. And
yep,
I did put a link to the filters in the notes for today.
Cool. And then the one other word that you mentioned is that word Satan. And in Aramaic, Satan means the resister, one who misleads. It's got nothing to do with the externalization to some evil entity out there that's out there to get us. And we can verify that very easily by going to the events that happened just after the Garden of Gethsemane when Yeshua comes out. And there's Peter. He's just, you know, activated his sword, attacking the high priest's servant. And Yeshua directly confronts him and calls him Satan. And then he explains exactly what the Aramaic word is. It's interesting how the mind can bypass this. I mean, he very clearly addresses Peter as Satan. Actually had this conversation with someone back a couple of months ago, and they were saying, oh, no, he wasn't calling Peter Satan. He was addressing, Satan was inhabiting Peter, and he was addressing Satan, the evil dude with the red suit, the tail, and the pitchfork. It's like, no, he's straight up calling Peter Satan, and then he says why he's calling him that. And it's got nothing to do with this dude with the red suit, the tail, and the pitchfork. He says, for you think in the mind of man rather than the plan of God. You're stuck in carbon-based memory. You're stuck in perception. And you're resisting the truth. If you were to be able to tune into the actuality of this moment, you would know that I have set up this whole scenario that's about to unfold to demonstrate a principle to the world. And here you are trying to stop it. Get thee behind me, Satan. It's like, get out of the way. You're not going to stop this thing. This is what I came to do. Interestingly enough, if you listen to the words, and it's interesting how they, so many Greek scholars will tell us it was all written in Greek to begin with. But interestingly enough, there are some of the final words from the cross, Eli, Eli, sama, lama sabachthani, and we're told that was left in the original Aramaic. well, if it was left in the original Aramaic, then obviously the original was Aramaic. And what does it mean? Has he been abandoned by the Creator? Oh, wait a minute. Here's the Creator hanging on a cross, abandoned by the Creator. That's all Greek to me. No. The words Eli, Eli, lama sabachthani are a greeting to his father, to our father, saying, ah, I got it. I understand why you reserved me for this. Abandoned in Aramaic is similar to the word that would represent being set aside for a special purpose. So what Yeshua was saying was, oh, not you've abandoned me, but, oh, I got that you set me aside for this special purpose. I'm not buying into the hostility, the fear, the pain, the trauma. I'm staying conscious as the presence of active love so they can kill my form, but they can't touch me. My awareness is not dependent on my form, and give me 3 days and I'll rebuild it. And it all fits and just starts to make sense. So that would be my thoughts. And if there's any other interaction, you're in the chat room, so as I understood it, so are there any other thoughts? Does that fit and make sense?
While we're waiting on him to respond, we only have 3 minutes, but we have a hand up.
Okay, let's go for it.
All right, Rex, 517, you're on the air.
Hey, young man, welcome. How are you doing? Hello, Rex. Are you muted, Rex? Is he there, Jeannie?
There. Yes, I was muted.
Oh, there you are.
Can you hear me now?
Yep.
Okay, so that took a minute. All right. So,
technology.
Yes, I'm doing great. Thank you. No, that had nothing to do with technology. It had everything to do with me in the moment. Just not
okay.
Doing correctly. But that being said, I was teaching a class called Laws of Living at Unity Church, and I had 6 students, and this was many years ago, and everybody knows the Laws of Living. I was saying that with tongue-in-cheek. I was sharing what you were just talking about. And all of a sudden I had a sensation at the time. It was a feeling of knowing Yeshua and when he was on the cross. And I just put my arms out and I said, you know, and he was there as explaining it. And all of a sudden that was overwhelming feeling and sensation of being Yeshua, although I know I wasn't. I was tuning into that frequency, I would suggest, and that vibration. And the very things that were said, for this you have set me aside, is what I remembered seeing. But it came across so clearly with this remarkable awe, Michael, of what that actually meant. And you just resonated it, and I wanted to share that.
Cool. Yeah, that would be it exactly. I think it was a moment for him of, up to that point, it was cooperation with the plan and being part of the source of the plan, though perhaps not really fully understanding until that moment. And then it was like, oh, I got it. Yes.
Yeah.
I've been reserved to demonstrate this. How, what a privilege.
Tremendous. Awesome, brother. Thank you for
all right,
me to
sweet.
Say that.
Have a blessed one. All right, lots of love, blessings, everybody. Thank you for joining us. Create the best year yet of your eternal life. It's an awesome gift to give the world. Bye bye.